Cold mornings, frosty windows. Yep, it's that time of year. So treat yourself and start your day with a cup of fresh roasted Sterling Roastery coffee, sourced from around the world and roasted multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. It's the kind of warm-up every sports fan deserves this holiday season. And right now, you can win one of three $50 Sterling gift cards, perfect for gifting or building your own winning lineup of Java in the morning. Enter today at sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways so you can wake up, warm up, and Sterling up this holiday season. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
125 defining moments, one legendary league. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and a great book is out right now, NFL Moments, 125 Icons and Stories That Define the NFL. It's a definitive visual history of the National Football League, packed with iconic images and untold stories behind the game's biggest plays and its greatest players. From the early legends like Red Grange to today's stars like Patrick Mahomes, this book is a touchdown for fans who crave more than just stories. So give your football bookshelf a Hall of Fame upgrade or snag a holiday gift for that NFL history buff on your shopping list. Pick up NFL Moments, available now at your favorite bookseller. You made it just in time for this great episode coming up on a Downtown Athletic Club trophy winner calling a game. We get into this story and more with Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com right after this.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another edition where we go to FootballArchaeology.com's Timothy P. Brown to talk about one of his famous tidbits. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Darren. Good to see you again.
Good to see you too. And it's good to be seen.
Looking forward to making a big call in this next in our discussion. Interesting scenario.
Yeah, this is a very intriguing title that you have. And I can remember when this came out just recently, I said, boy, this is one that I want to read right now. I'm not going to pause on this one. Your title was A Heisman Winner Makes the Call. Very intriguing. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, well, we've been doing a run of official or referee, you know, black and white stripe kind of person tidbits of late, or at least, you know, the ones on Pigskin Dispatch. So, as you know, a lot of people know, Jay Berwanger was the first Heisman Trophy winner. U Chicago halfback officially he didn't win the first Heisman Trophy. He was first to receive the award that the next year was renamed the Heisman Trophy. So just like the first Super Bowl wasn't a Super Bowl, you know, same kind of thing.
Right.
So he was the first guy picked, first ever pick in the NFL draft in the 1936 draft. And he never played pro football. He asked George Halas, he told him he wanted $12,500 a year for 3 years. Halas told him to go get stuffed, and so he never played, you know, and he ended up did just fine for himself financially and everything. It's one of those funny, like the first three Heisman Trophy winners never played pro football, I think it is. But anyways, he stayed involved in the game. Like a lot of guys who were great players back then, he refereed, or at least officiated. So he wins the Heisman in 35, and by 1940, he's a Big Ten official. So, you know, he's doing all the big games. He took off a couple of years because he was in service during World War II. But for the 1949 Rose Bowl, he was named the field judge for the game. And you might go, so back then, intersectional games, or non-conference games, typically they had between kind of evenly matched teams, they'd have a split officiating crew. So half the guys from the Pacific Coast Conference at the time and half the guys from the Big Ten or Big Nine at the time, I guess. So he's the field judge, but just to make sure, you know, to point out that it wasn't like totally unfair towards the Big Ten, the guy who was the referee, a guy named Jim Kane, he had played for Washington in the 1937 Rose Bowl. So they had former players, former conference players, you know, on both sides in that game. So the game itself is best known for a call that Berwinger made. It was a controversial call. And it was really, you know, tightly played game. In the second quarter, it's tied 7-7. Northwestern is playing Cal, and they get the ball, have a real nice sustained drive down the field. Mostly, you know, they're running the ball, and they're at about like the 14-yard line. They give the ball on an off tackle right to their fullback, a guy named Art Murakowski. He runs 13 yards, gets to the 1 yard line. And so what do they do on the next play? They run the same play, right? I mean, that's coaches did that all the time back then. They should do it more, you know, nowadays, but anyways, they run off tackle right to the same, to the fullback again. And, as he's crossing the goal line, either just before or just after, the ball pops out and Cal recovers the ball in the end zone. So Cal's all happy. But, and there's, if you go to the tidbit, there's a YouTube video of that play. Well, the whole game, but I, you know, get it to the two plays that I just spoke about. That's what, you know, it's time stamped to that point. So, now, you know, I watched the video a bunch of times. There's still photographs of it. I can't tell whether he lost the ball before he hit the goal line or not. But Berwinger is right on the goal line. He sees the play. I don't think he really had anybody blocking his, you know, perspective or anything. And so at that time in football, the referee was the only one who signaled a touchdown. Anybody else who signaled or who, you know, if a ball crossed the goal line, typically they raised one hand, you know, a fist, and they raised the hand to indicate, you know, dead ball. And so he ends up taking 5-6 steps, goes right to the referee, has a brief conversation with the referee, and the referee turns and signals touchdown, right? Because the referee's basically basing his call off of what his field judge told him.
Right.
And so, you know, it's one of those games where, I mean, as controversial a call is probably a bigger deal in the press than it was on the field, because Cal's coach was like, hey, in the locker room after, he's like, hey, if the referee says the ball crossed the goal line, that's good enough for me. So like he put an end to it. You know, it was a non-discussion point. But, you know, so part of it is just reminds you that back in the day, the officials were making calls all the time without the assistance of instant replay, because the technology didn't exist. And then even once the technology existed, it took a while to accept as something that they could use in the game. And so, you know, they made controversial calls all the time. This was one of them, and it was just part of the game, right? So it's just one of those things that it kind of really, it's a great example of, it reminds you of a different time and a different process, different expectations. And it's just kind of interesting or fun that it was a Heisman Trophy winner who's making that call, you know?
Right.
So, you know, that to me is kind of the fun part of it. It's just, it's like how many Heisman Trophy winners nowadays would be out there schlepping around as a field judge on some football crew. Not very many,
Not even too many players anymore do that,
Yeah, there are some guys who had a cup of coffee who then go and, do their thing, but not even that, there's not very many anymore.
Yeah, that's definitely sure, for sure. I think the other fascinating thing is, like you said, you have video of this game that happened, 75 years ago, basically. And it's nice to look at it. And it's not the clearest video that you can see exactly what happened, but some things that I watched is I watched to see where what position the official was in to make the call. And Bert Wanger was that, like you described earlier, he's in great position where he should be able to make that call. Sort of looks like he's on the goal line. It's hard to tell because of the angle. But the other thing is the body language of the runner. I think he made the right call because the body language of the runner, if you lose the football and you're worried about doing it, you're starting to, search for the ball or reach out or something. He really doesn't react like that. It just sort of, it goes what appeared apparently over the goal line, and then all of a sudden you see the ball loose and a little bit of chaos and that's it. But I think he probably made the right call, and it probably on the field it wasn't as hard of a call as what, like you said, the press made it sound like. And but still, it's interesting that, like you said, a Heisman winner that was the top player in college football just a little over a decade earlier is making the call in what's the biggest college game of the year, in essence, in the Rose Bowl. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, and you mentioned the angle, because the angle of the video looks like it's a press box, camera, right? Maybe it's the 40-yard line or the 35 or something somewhere up in the stands, but it's from fairly high up, and definitely, it is not a view straight down the goal line, right? Like now we're so used to pylon cams
Yeah, and
and
it's not in 4D high def either. It's a
Yeah.
grainy looking video that they had in the day,
So, it's just, again, it's just the expectations have changed so significantly in terms of, the technology available to make the right call. Back then, it was just, hey, you had a human being making the call, just like the human being running the ball, and hopefully they both got it right. And then you went on with your day.
But just another enigma of Jay Berwanger of many, I don't know if it was a first you'd call that, but just interesting facets that are connect him to the game of football, like you and you mentioned the other ones earlier. So yeah, great job on that, and a great piece of football Americana to enjoy, and with the
Well,
video.
then the other thing that was fun. So I basically wrote that whole story and then realized, you know what? I got to check to see how many times. So I knew that Northwestern had only been to the Rose Bowl twice. And by the way, Northwestern goes on to win that game. They win 20-14. So Berwanger's call made the difference in who won the game, right? So that's Northwestern's only Rose Bowl victory, because they only played the last, and then they didn't appear until 96, and they lost that one. Cal plays in the 1949, 1950, and 1951 Rose Bowls, loses all three, and they haven't been back since. So it's basically between those two schools that decided which one has had Rose Bowl bragging rights for, well, from 49 until, 25. That's, 76 years, right?
But you could add a little bit more controversy to that as well, because the city that Berwanger played his college ball in, and I assume he probably lived there afterwards, and where's Northwestern from? It's the same city, and they win that game. So that's kind of okay, but I'm sure I don't think that's the case. I don't think he homered a call, and I'm not saying that. I think he got the call right, is my opinion from what the video evidence shows, but who knows?
Yeah. Well, at the time, you know, in his playing days, you know, I mean, it was Chicago is a Big Ten team too, you know, not for much longer, but,
right.
But, you know, so they were, Northwestern wasn't their biggest rival. It was maybe by then it was, but Wisconsin and Chicago were pretty big rivals. Michigan earlier on, but that had kind of faded by then because Chicago just wasn't very good. Anyways, interesting stuff.
Yeah, most definitely. And you have interesting stuff, like you say, all the time on your website and your social media. And maybe you could share with folks where they can enjoy these things that you call tidbits that give you great facets of football history.
Yep. Just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site, so you can subscribe, in which case you'll get, if you want to get an email, every time I send or publish a new article, you'll get that. If you want to just subscribe, you can, it'll pop up in your feed on Substack. You can also follow me on Blue Sky because I publish, or I, you know, put the link out there every time that I publish a new story. So either one, or just go out there and look around whenever you get a hankering.
All right. Well, we get the hankering quite often around here, and those that listen to the podcast, so I'm hoping that they're doing this quite often like I am. It's a great piece of getting some information at 7 o'clock in the evening on the East Coast that has some great football history, and we appreciate you here each and every Tuesday sharing some of these with us.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
You did not see their faces on the Wheaties boxes, nor did they have the headlines, but they were breaking barriers, one pitch at a time. The integration of minor league baseball, a history and player register, 1946 to 1959, by Rick Swain and Gary C. Fink, shines a light on the overlooked heroes who paved the way for future legends. From dusty bus rides to hostile crowds, these players fought for a place in a game that did not want to see them win. More than history, it's a tribute to courage, perseverance, and the power of a game to change. Honor their legacy today and grab a copy of The Integration of Minor League Baseball at your favorite bookseller.